forever. Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning a winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and bam, onomatopoeia. Uh-huh. It's comic book commentary.
Hello, and welcome to Comic Book Commentary. I am Carla Pacheco, and we're going to be discussing Rick and Morty issue number 48, but actually not the main issue. We're going to be talking about the backup story, but to do that, I actually brought in a very special guest, editor-in-chief of Oni, and awesome lady all around, and beloved comic goddess. I'm definitely not sucking up to my boss. Sarah Gatos is here.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I edited this comic, and since we are literally sitting right next door to Emerald City Comic Con right now, we thought it would be a good chance to chat about this.
So we are live from the past at Emerald City right now, which is why we're both kind of brain dead, even though it's only Thursday. But, you know, sometimes that's enough. So we're going to focus on, I guess we should do some quick intros. So I'm Carla Pacheco. I've written some of these backup stories for Rick and Morty. I've also written for Marvel. And I am also the author of Inspector Pancakes Helps the President of France Solve the White Orchid Murders, which is probably the only children's book about really terrible murders. But you should check that out because it's an adorable dog who solves murders, but only in the fine print. It's a large print story where you can read that to a child, and then a really, really graphic noir in the fine print. So that's my claim to fame. That's all I got going on. Sarah is actually way more impressive, so I'll let you talk about you.
Doubtful. So yes, I am editor-in-chief at Oni Comics, or Oni Press. I also edit the Rick and Morty comics, as well as some other fun stuff. Previous to Oni, I was at IDW, and previous to that, I was at Wildstorm. I have a long history in what we call the licensed comics business, which we will talk about a little bit here.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of one of the things we want to focus on, because licensed comics, a lot of people ask, oh, how does this connect to the show? Like Rick and Morty, obviously very beloved show. So I'll let you kind of go through the how does this connect to the show and how does it not connect to the show?
Yeah, definitely. So the Rick and Morty comics have been at Oni Press for a while now. Oni was actually one of the very first Rick and Morty licensors. They loved the show very early on and kind of got in touch with everyone to get these comics rolling. We are just starting to put together issue number 50, which is a great achievement. A lot of comics don't go that long anymore, and these 50 issues, in addition to the other ones that we've done, including some called Rick and Morty Presents, which are kind of issues focused on different characters. There's Lil Poopy Superstar, which is a miniseries, and another miniseries called Pocket Like You Stole It. And then right now at Emerald City, we've also debuted the Rick and Morty Dungeons and Dragons crossover trade paperback. So all of these Rick and Morty comics are, you know, Oni doesn't own Rick and Morty.
Right.
Sadly, I do not. it is owned by Adult Swim and Cartoon Network. So we license them from those entities. And so it goes through an approval process.
Yeah. The approval process from the writing standpoint is, you know, so that was something that was new for me, where like it really is every step of the process. Like they have to approve my script. Do they have to approve the initial pitch as well first?
It goes back and forth. If there's something that I think is going to be a little challenging, it saves everyone a little bit of time and heartbreak just to run it by the licensors first. They have a whole series of things that they need to comment on for standards and practices and all that good stuff. And then they'll also have comments now and then about just the quality of the story in terms of, like, you know.
Don't tell me they said I suck.
No, not that kind of quality. More like if for some reason we were to like overlook a giant plot hole or something right. like that, they would be there to also comment on that sort of thing.
I think they actually, they did that with this backup story that in issue number 48, where we had it written out, or I think, did they actually come back on that after we'd already gotten the script?
Probably. So basically the licensors contractually get to see it at several steps. The script, the pencils or layouts, so they can kind of get a sense of how the art is looking. And then again, when the entire book is finished, and they can have comments at any point during that time that we need to address and likely change. And that might be, hey, jerks, you colored Rick's hair incorrectly in this panel. Or, hey, jerks, you have this person's shirt as a striped shirt on page one, but it turns into a polka dot on page three. Mm-hmm. Or it could be all of us being like, ooh, whoops, we kind of screwed up here. This is all everybody's mistake. It's one last chance to make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted.
I know I've had, when I told people, oh, I'm working on a couple Rick and Morty shorts, the first question is always, oh, like, is this going to show up in the show? And my explanation for it has always been, it's like, we have to make sure we're canon, but we're not necessarily going to become canon to
yes,
them.
Exactly. The whole canon debate is annoying to me because honestly, we're just trying to make the best comic. To me, the most important thing is that it's in the spirit of the show and is an extension of the show. Previous to this, I edited a lot of Star Trek comics. And people would complain a lot about whether or not the story is or is not canon. And for a lot of things, sure, it's canon until it's not.
Right.
And there's not a lot I personally can do about that. Yeah. So I almost consider the Rick and Morty comics like watching another little episode of the show. It's just in a very different format. And it has a little bit different pacing because I do not think that animation and comics are a one-to-one comparison. Right. I think they're definitely related in a lot of ways, but there's still stuff in comics that we can do that they can't, and vice versa.
Right. And I'm being super unprofessional, and there's my phone beeping in the background. Yay! So let's get into the actual Rick and Morty issue 48 here. So the main story was written by Kyle Starks, illustrated by Mark Ellaby. My backup was art by Ian McGinty, and then Sarah Stern and Crank did the coloring and letters for both the main story and for the backup. So for someone who's listening along to a comic book commentary stuff and isn't familiar with backup stories, backup stories can be anywhere from a single page to a four page to, I think, I've done like 10 or 12 page mm-hmm. stories for Marvel as part of like, not that weren't, those weren't really backup, but, So for this, are all Rick and Morty backups about four pages or?
Generally, yeah. Generally about four pages. It's a nice split, I think, 18 and four for us.
Yeah. And so I remember, so when you approached me about writing this, it was, A, I was flailing wildly around the room, or the boat. I live on a boat. And it was, you know, so I was super excited because it is one of my favorite shows. And, you know, I think one of the first questions I asked was like, okay, so you wanted me to do a series of four page backup stories. And so I was like, so do those normally like go along with the main story? Are they normally completely separate? Can we go bonkers? And, you know, you said, you know, it's like, well, you can either have it basically be a 16 page story split into four parts or four standalone stories.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we can kind of do whatever we want. But to make everybody's lives easier, right. I personally like not connected stories. And that's simply because of the way people, I think, are consuming comics these days, especially the Rick and Morty comics, which at least the ones that we're doing right now, they're not parts of a longer arc. Each one can be read independently. So it kind of makes sense to me that the B stories are read independently as well. And I feel like there's pros and cons to both. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a connected series of four-page ones, that means you have to figure out all these big cliffhangers. Right. Every four pages, the bad part of doing not connected ones is that you really don't have a lot of space, which right. I know is probably the hardest thing that you had to deal with.
Specifically in this issue. So we'll start, we're going to skip past all of Kyle's awesome main story and go straight to my awesome little story. So writing a complete story in just four pages, it can certainly be a challenge. So if you've already checked out Rick and Morty 46 and 47, so me trying to split the difference between a connected story and four standalone stories, what I decided to go with, and Sarah let me, was I wanted them all slightly connected to Blitz and Chips. And if you read 46, 47, now 48, and then coming out next month, 49, the final story, you'll see that I was basically ripping off The Simpsons. Was where I was kind of going with it, was that 22 short films about Springfield, which I know is like I know that's like a homage to a much more artsy mm-hmm. film, but of course I'm an idiot, so I only know The Simpsons reference. But I wanted them to all be standalone stories, but if you're paying attention, you can kind of, and you read them all together, you can tell that they're all, like, if not necessarily at the same day, they're all kind of happening around this shared universe. And so they're all completely individual stories, but you can see what's connecting them, like what the common thread is, and that's Blitz and Chips. But on this one, I kind of went... I went back to my wasteland roots, where I really love the post-apocalyptic Rick and Morty episodes, because every year I go out into the middle of the desert for a week and pretend that Mad Max happened, and I dress up like I escaped from Waterworld. And I also own the Exxon Valdez that I won fighting in the Thunderdome. That's actually a true thing that happened. So I obviously relate to the wasteland story. So teenage wasteland here, we're going to start. So we've got Summer coming out of the house. And this is, I'm sorry, but the line, we're going to go make fun of Casey for having to work at the food court only poor people like, that made me laugh, and I don't care. So then, Hemorrhage, our main man, shows up. And he's come back to win Summer back, who was his wife, and he kind of divorced her she divorced him because he was kind of a shitty husband. So this was actually what Sarah was talking about earlier. This is where Adult Swim came back and said we were breaking canon. Original story was I'd had Hemorrhage coming up. Like, it hadn't... had it gone to art yet? I think it was just a script.
Just script. Script.
And so my original concept was that Hemorrhage had gone out into the desert, found his own lump of glowing rock, created that technology so that he could come back on his own. And I think I'd had it kind of like he'd built like a flex capacitor into the war rig. And so that was a major plot point. I was like, yeah, they could come up with this. And Adult Swim came back and they're like, no, only Rick can come up with that. That's why he's Rick. I was like, oh, right. So switched it around to Rick instead, came back and was just buying it off of Hemorrhage. So obvious. And also then, rather than going through a full explanation on this, I just had Summer cut him off of, we're not doing a flashback, so off we go. And that's also kind of a joke at me, because I'm pretty fond of doing big dramatic flashbacks.
Well, that made me really happy too, because we didn't have to then figure out how to make space for the flashback, so I like that very much. And I also really love that panel too, because I think it shows Ian McGinty very McGinty-ing it. Mm-hmm. In that I love someone who can do very on-model art, is what we call it. Like, it looks like the show, but it still feels like Ian to me at the exact same time.
Right.
And
right.
so that, whatever, just take me to school panel made me really happy when I saw it.
Well, and also, like, man, he knocked it out of the park mm-hmm. on that war rig. Like, that was, like, all of, like, he really just did a phenomenal job on all of this. And Sarah Stern did an awesome job coloring it. And then we'll get to the point where we'll talk about what a great, great patient job poor Crank did on the lettering. Because I fucked up.
Yeah.
Hemorrhage takes Summer to school. And she's just like, just shut up, drop me off behind. He's trying to win her back. He's like, just, hey, you know, if you're not doing anything, I saved enough the glowing green rock. I can get us back. And she's just like, no, not having it. So she's obviously annoyed. He's following her to school. And then, you know, this is a call. This next page, where it's that first panel, is a callback to the episode of the TV show where they were banging on a tool bench. Definitely canon. he's trying, but then Principal Vagina comes in, misunderstands selling green rocks. I did like the line, this doesn't look like a school regulation bucket. Principal Vagina rips off the bucket. We see poor Hemorrhage's incredibly, incredibly unfortunate pedo stash. Meanwhile, Principal thinks that all the kids are laughing at his terrible joke. Of course, the kids are just laughing at his unfortunate face.
The funny thing is, like, when I saw this panel from Ian, I was like, I live in Portland, so I'm like, I know, like, a million hipsters that, like, just like this asshole. Like, he would clean up in Portland. He should just move. I also really love this because I love any sort of Rick and Morty stuff where the bizarreness of their lives comes face to face with their existence in high school or normal life. Mm-hmm. And this episode, the episode of the series, is probably my favorite episode of Rick and Morty. So to have Hemorrhage back and like seeing Summer as just a normal high school student versus like the insane adventures, especially this one where she had like a whole life with this man and mm-hmm. like a romance and a and then, you know, the fallout made me really happy.
Well, yeah, and so in issue 47, the previous issue to this one, the B story that I did is all about the U-Tow, which is the tow truck company that the Smiths family ends up using. And I just kind of created a whole little backstory what their deal was, and it turns out they'd been kind of ending up in a lot of the same places that Rick was, because some of his science stuff got dumped in the back of a U-Haul a U-Tow. And so one of the parts where they show up is actually in the post-apocalyptic world. So that's where Rick's like, yeah, Mad Maxine, go get me another beer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's where, like, so again, like, little parts where the stories are all kind of interconnecting, but they all just kind of stand alone or connect to the series in their own way. So now we get the nerds. So they're still looking for that green rock, and poor Hemorrhage is just like, so out of his element at this point. He doesn't know why they care, but he's also kind of not impressed with them. But be a rock star, join Mineral Club today. And other kids are obviously already making fun of him. But so I did like this, you know, this is fascinating. Where'd you get it? And we just flash back to Hemorrhage destroying everyone. And he just goes with, found it in my backyard. Mm-hmm.
That was probably my favorite page turn reveal in the story. Is again contrasting like this dude who's getting made fun of in high school. But if you remember the episode, everyone is basically killing each other over very little. And he's kicking some ass. And then he's like, oh, yeah, found it in my backyard. Because he somehow knows that that would not go over well.
Right, yeah. It's like, yeah, he's so desperate now. Like, he's been bullied, even though he's Lord of the Deathstalkers. It's just like, teenagers are fucking terrible. They will cut you down to your component parts real fast. But, you know, he found some cool nerds that are digging his style. And so they immediately ask, like, hey, you know, we got room for another play in our weekly gaming session. You know, our cleric got tired of people making fun of us and went out for gymnastics. That is actually a joke that is based exactly at my boyfriend, who was like a college level gymnast, but also plays a lot of D&D.
Nice.
So this whole page, there's just a lot going on. This story was one of my toughest. It's the one I think I'm proudest of the four that I did. Though you should still read all of them. it was the toughest because I wanted to get so much information into it. And was this the one where you had to pull me back from how many panels?
Well, I think we pulled you back on the script level. And then, so basically, this is where we sing the praises of Crank, our wonderful letterer. Basically, she overwrote this entire section in terms of the dialogue.
Yeah.
And what that means is if we were to put all the words that she wrote on the page on the actual printed page, it would be mostly text, not art, which is the cardinal sin of comic book writing. But it's very hard to visually see that sometimes. So what Crank did, which was great, he just lettered it and you could see exactly where the overrun was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like, and I knew from the beginning that it was, I made, you know, and all apologies to the master, but yeah, I said several times, like, I went full Bendis and I'm so, so sorry. But I think we also were kind of waiting to see how it played. Like, I think I went through and cut a lot of stuff at script level. And then I think I even asked, I was like, do I need to cut more? And I think at that point we were like, let's see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. And then we can adjust from there. Mm-hmm. So that is, like, this one was difficult because I would have killed for 5 pages. Like, just one more page. I could get this all in there. But you only have 4. And so trying to structure a full story and making sure you get those 4 major beats throughout it is a really, really interesting challenge. But it's one I definitely enjoy. But also, God bless Crank for knocking that out. And then once we kind of realized, like, oh, okay, where it is, I was able to go through and murder a lot more darlings as if I was in the apocalypse. But yeah, so I think the original script, how many panels is on this page? So I think this was the page where it's a 6-panel page, and originally I think I almost was trying to do 8. And so that's where we cut out 2 panels, and that's why we've just got 2 weeks of soulful teen bonding later, and that's all you need. You don't actually need those 2 panels because everyone's seen teen movies. You know how this played out. So we don't need the additional stuff. So this was where I cut out a big chunk of jokes that I liked, but they weren't advancing the story and you wouldn't have been able to see any of the art. So, you know, they're having fun playing D&D, and they reveal that they've got a little jazz trio and that they get to perform at the school assembly next week. And Hemi wants in. Hell yeah. All about that smooth jazz.
That's a very good sound effect.
And that is exactly how it was written in the script. All of those Z's. It was just like, I need a sound effect that is just smooth jazz. Summer, not impressed, but also kind of showing her ass that she definitely did bang him in a pool of mutant blood and devastated remains of once great civilization. And then she's obviously pretty angry about it. But I do love the banner in the background, which, like, if you can read behind it, is get jazz for mandatory statewide hepatitis screenings.
It's real good. It's real good. And it's one of those things that we know we can't put it, like, front and center. But hopefully maybe, like, you're reading this maybe two or three times through, maybe like 15 times through.
Yeah,
and it, in multiple reads, it's one of those things that you didn't see the first time. And then you're like, oh, damn, that's good.
So then we've got Principal Vagina now, you know, making the big announcement. And you can tell that the jazz band name is the Achieve Tones. And then he's trying to remind them that they all need to get their the microphones, you know, feedbacking. So they obviously need to schedule something before something gets worse. So then we go to page four. Man, we swim through this so quickly. So they're back out in the. So this is back behind the school where they were originally dropped off because Summer didn't want to be seen with them. Hemorrhage not really getting it. He thought that people, like, even though he got bullied pretty bad, he still thought that you know, he would be protecting the nerds, but he's actually been making everything worse. But they think he's worth it. And then, yeah, high school is truly the harshest wasteland. There's kind of a ongoing thing here with this little dude, Jeff, of I think all of the comics kind of end up having some little element of people trying to find a place that they belong, or trying to find, like, a little a place where they fit in, where they can succeed, a new home. And so all four comics, in addition to having a, you know, through line where they all end up at Blitz and Chips or are somehow connected to Blitz and Chips, it's all about belonging, because I'm a fucking sap. So, you know, Hemorrhage is doing some soul searching. You know, when he left, he was just trying to win back Summer. He saved enough of the rock to bribe Rick to take him back to the wasteland. But he has discovered that his real friends and his real family are with these fucking nerds. And so maybe they can just find some place they can all belong. And that, of course, is Blitz'em Chips. So, yeah, it's the most exclusive table game in the universe. You know, Zinglopian Pie Gal, Venusian Strip Poker. So I had to look up the word supercoracoitus. It was I was trying to find, I was making Lynn be kind of like a bird nerd in my mind. Like, that was, I think that was some stuff that there wasn't enough time to talk about, that she was just this big freaking nerd, that was like the science nerd. Like, they were all their own different types of nerd, and so she was like the science nerd, and so she was just loving living in an alien world because she can see all these different types of biology and stuff. And then turns out Smooth Jazz is an aphrodisiac there, and they're making a shit ton of flurbos. And oh, excuse me. And so here, this is actually a reference to my actual wasteland stuff that I do. The Skullduggers are a tribe that, well, it's a, you know, like, they play Skullduggar, and there's a lot of really violent games out in the wasteland. So that one's kind of a combination of rugby and football, except it's played with a dog skull. They're a Jugger team. They're the team that plays Jugger. And so Jugger played with a dog skull. They use a 3D printed one now, but it's still pretty violent. So blood offering to the Skullduggers. That's a tribe from Wasteland. Charisma check to see if they accept it, or split your skull open like an overripe melon and feast on your entrails. Glarp, 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 glarp. So that's actually a thing from the show that my partner and I say pretty much all the time, just at each other. But yeah, bold choice. You've encountered Skullduggers, my friend. That's how I did four pages.
Yeah, it's hard. I think if anyone had, you know, the essay things that you had to write in college or high school, sometimes the shorter ones are harder to do than the longer ones. And so I feel like I kind of ask a lot of people when they're writing these. And, you know, it's supposed to be like, oh, it's just a little backup story. But it really does take a lot of time in whittling down things to their essence, which for comics is nice because I feel like comics can get very essential in just what you show on the page with words and art. You can get a lot across in a short amount of space.
Yeah, I've actually, like, right now, we're at Emerald City Comic Con, and I've got a deadline for Monday for a 30-page comic, as you do, and I'm very excited about it, but I'm actually having a harder time with that, just because I've gotten in the headspace of being able to tell a story in only 4 to 5 pages, and so all of a sudden I've got, it's like, when you live in a nice comfy dog crate and then all of a sudden you've got an entire field to play in and it's a little overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So, I'm trying to figure out how to just fill up that field with dog crates right now.
And it would be really interesting to talk to Ian and Sarah too about like, these are the writing challenges of 4 pages. What are the coloring and art challenges of 4 pages? Because they also have to communicate a large amount of information in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe Ben can invite them on because that'd be very, very cool to hear from. So I think that about wraps it up. But thank you so much to Sarah Gatos for coming and hanging out. And we definitely were not drinking in my room while we were doing this, and you didn't hear any glass or ice tinkling throughout the entire episode. But thank you so much. We're both probably gonna go take naps, and then we're heading back out to the show, which again was in the past that you're now hearing it. But check out Rick and Morty 46, 47, 48, and 49 if you want to get all 4 of my backup stories and read them together and see how they connect. And then also keep an eye out for issue number 50, which is going to be a big whiz bang. But thank you guys so much, and enjoy more comic book commentary.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Sarah Gatos on Twitter. That's SarahGaydos. And Oni Press is at Oni Press.
Oh, yeah. And I'm the Carla Pacheco. On the TheKarlaPacheco on Twitter. But just follow Sarah and then see who she follows and you can find me. That's probably easier. But thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. Enjoy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog.